You are listening to the cycling podcast, A De Vuelta a España, in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyans Run. Stay tuned. Today, we are in Igualada.
Good evening, Richard.
Good evening, Lionel. Where are we, Lionel?
We are in a little rooftop bar.
The Sunset Bar.
Yes, at our hotel in Barcelona. Where
I feel like we should be drinking cocktails.
We're completing the... We're doing the Madison change, aren't we? I'm slinging you into Vuelta action.
Might just let you go around for another lap.
I thought you'd say that. I'm quite tired. A little
trick in the Madison book.
I'm quite tired. I'd like a lap out, please. It's been a good but quite a challenging week podcasting on my own. I mean, with obviously not on my own, but doing all the driving. Today I had some small disasters.
Well, you've had a lot of help. I mean, obviously Daniel is available most evenings, not tonight, unfortunately. Hence I'm here. Orla Shinawi, I think we're going to hear from her again tonight. And we're propped up. We're being carried, aren't we, by the two audio diarists, Nick Schultz and James Knox.
Well, they're the best thing about our Vuelta coverage this year by a country mile.
I'm going to say really nice things about them because I know now that James is listening. James provides us with a corrections corner later on. You can hear that a bit later in the podcast.
But this morning I drove up from somewhere sort of down there on the coast up to here, where the start was, and more or less, I mean, it was in Catalonia, Valls or Balls, as they say. The finish was in Igualada, and well, it was a reasonably early start, and unfortunately, I misread the sat nav and ended up on a single carriageway road which had kind of little posts down the middle of the road. So I knew I was going in the wrong direction, but there was nowhere to do a U-turn, even though the sat nav was telling me to make a U-turn, and I had to drive 20 minutes out before there was a little roundabout and then 20 minutes back. So I
mood in the Skoda at that point.
Well, I was listening to some podcasts, so the mood, I there was nothing I could do. The mood was pretty black, actually. I did do some solo swearing at that point because it is tough. I mean, for the listen, a couple of listeners have asked us questions on Facebook about the sort of practicalities and the logistics of doing the podcast on the Grand Tours, and you know, it makes me appreciate the Tour de France. You know, there are three of us, two of us to share the driving. We've got Francois, who is great at kind of keeping things nice and calm, isn't he, really? I mean, he lends absolutely no practical help whatsoever, let's be honest.
No. Harsh. He's a wonderfully calming presence, and I think for that alone, yeah, Francois is well worth his place in the nest.
But if we come up to a roadblock, he can talk to the gendarme much more efficiently than we can.
He's the bomb.
Exactly. Whereas here, on my own, you know, trying to navigate, get to the start in time, find the right place to park, yeah, it can be quite challenging. So I'm looking forward to hearing how you get on next week.
Yeah, great. Was there a stage today?
There was.
Will we hear about it?
Shall we?
Because I want to find out, I want some podcast recommendations for the next week from you, but we'll get onto that later maybe.
Okay. Well, stage 8 from Balls to Igualada. The race has really moved right up the coast. We're in Catalonia now. A break of 21 went clear. There was some rain in the last section. You're looking over into the middle distance, Richard, at Barcelona.
Well, it's a hell of a view we've got from here, isn't it? I mean, it's just a view across the sprawling city of Barcelona. Not the Barcelona of the Rambas or the postcards, is it here, or the beach? But
no.
Bit more industrial, but still.
I'm wondering if either of these hills that we can see is Montjuïc, where they used to have the sort of two-day race. Do you remember that at the end of the season? It used to be one of the last races in the European road race season back in the 80s and 90s.
I'm not sure.
And it had a sort of circuit race and a time trial. Anyway, let's get on to stage 8 of the Vuelta. 21 riders went clear. There was some really heavy rain at points and a second category climb towards the end, which ruled out all of the sprinters. But that was immaterial, really, because the break was always going to stay away. They'd earned enough of an advantage early on. Four riders went clear, and of them, Martin Tusveld of the Sunweb team was the last man standing. He came down on...
Well, yeah, that was an unfortunate turn of phrase there. He wasn't the last man standing, was
no,
he?
No, he fell on a roundabout, coming through a roundabout. The wet road took his tyres away. He was really doing a great job for his teammate, Nikias Arndt, in the group behind, who, when you looked at the list of riders in that group, you would have thought that in a sprint finish, he would be the big favourite. He's won in the past a stage of the Giro, the last stage of the Giro in 2016 in Turin. He's won the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race as well. Good sprinter. Had a little bit of difficulty on the climb, but was back in the group in time for the sprint. And he won it pretty comfortably ahead of Alex Aramburu of Caja Rural, who was in the four-man break that got away, and Tosh van der Sande of Lotto Soudal. But significantly, Dylan Teuns of Bahrain Merida was sixth, so he's kind of, you know, he's really kind of pogoing up and down the general classification at the moment. And Nicolas Edé of Cofidis was 11th on the stage, but he has taken the red jersey.
The bar of soap. It's the bar of soap Vuelta, isn't it?
It is. And with all that rain today, everyone got themselves into a bit of a lather with the bar of soap. So Nicolas Edé of Cofidis is now in the lead by 2 minutes 21 from Dylan Teuns. Then come Lopez, Roglic, Valverde and Quintana. Lotto Soudal's Carl Fredrik Hagen is up to 7th because he was in the break as well. Tomorrow is a very short but really punchy stage into Andorra, 97 kilometres I think it is. And, well, will Lopez take the red jersey back, or will it be one of the other big three? Who knows?
The fastest clothing in the world tour. The home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Kenyon's Run.
Thanks very much to Rafa. And Lionel, you had one job at the start this morning. Did you manage that?
That's not true, actually. I had two jobs this morning, and I achieved one of them, and not the one you're about to ask me about.
Angel Madrazo was our peddler de charme for week one. You were going to present him with a T-shirt this morning. That was the arrangement.
As aforementioned, I lost 40 minutes on the GC this morning and arrived at the start fairly late. Had one interview assignment which I prioritised. I'll be honest, I forgot to take the T-shirt out of the car, and by the time I remembered, it was too late.
Hope
the race
has been ironed.
They've been laid very flat.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'll present that to him tomorrow. Hopefully, fingers crossed. So I've got this sort of mental image of Superman standing on the bar of soap in the shower and it flying off and somebody catching it, and it was Nicolas Edé today, wasn't it? A great little week Cofidis are having, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because Cofidis are one of the principal partners of the Vuelta a España. They've been sponsoring the Vuelta for quite a long time now.
Which is why they're here. I mean, that's why they're selected.
Yeah, probably the best part of a decade now. And, you see every day at the finish line, Cofidis is sprayed on the road just before and after the finish line. So it's a very important race. And without being unkind to them, they have more chance of making an impression on this race than they do perhaps at the Tour de France, where the level is a bit higher. But, yeah, they've had a great week. A stage win for Herrada. Jesus, and after Herrada, Jose fell short the previous day, and now Nicolas Edé is in the red jersey in very similar circumstances to the way Jesus Herrada took it last year from Simon Yates before Simon Yates then took it back. But the race for the stage was, I mean, I always, it's easy to say, and in hindsight, obviously with the benefit of looking at the results, but when you look at the 21 riders who were in that break, I thought, if Nikias Arndt doesn't win this, then I would have been surprised. I suppose Zdeněk Stybar would have been dangerous as well, but not in the event of it coming down to a sprint. But I did think that Sunweb played it very well. In a funny way, they had pressure on them because Arndt would have been the favourite, had to get over that climb, of course. And the fact that they had two riders there, they couldn't afford to mess that up. And I felt that Tussfeldt did a really good job because he got into the four-man move. When the four-man move was then finally swept up, he then countered and went again and just to ease the burden on Arndt, because he wouldn't have wanted it to kind of start jumping about again in the run into the finish. So he did a really excellent job. And back at the Sunweb bus, I waited for him because he'd obviously come down on that roundabout, the wet roads and the difficulty when roads that are very, very often dry suddenly become wet makes them pretty treacherous for cyclists. And it was a really innocuous looking slip. It wasn't like he was leaning over at 45 degrees to get round a roundabout really quickly. He was pretty upright and yet still slipped away. So the surface must have been pretty slippery. At the Sunweb bus, I saw him arrive and was shocked to see he had a big bandage over his eye and a huge bruise under his eye, and thought, blimey, that bruise looks pretty mature considering it's only about 45 minutes old. So I was kind of a bit taken aback by that. Obviously, in the course of our conversation, he revealed that that was the result of an incident a few days ago. But I started off by asking Martin Tussfeldt whether he felt that he'd taken one for the team.
Yeah, it was kind of, yeah, we had two cards to play, and it was also clear that Nikias was at least one of the fastest in the front, so he had a bit of difficulties on the climb. He was a bit behind, but that's why I tried to stop the peloton or the group a little bit, and when he came back in the descent, we two guys rode away and I went across. And yeah, that was also the plan. Nikias should save himself for the sprint, and I had to go cover every break. And that's what I did. And in the final, when the group almost came back, the best thing for me to do was just to go all in so that Nikias could still save his energy and save his energy for the sprint. And yeah, it's personally shit that I crashed. I never know what would have happened, but taking one for the team, that's it.
You've got quite a black eye there and a little cut over your eye and scuff on your leg, but hopefully not too bad.
No, this is my second crash. I crashed against the car, that's why I have this thing on my eye, and today was a lucky smaller crash, thanks.
So that's from a previous day?
Yeah, it was not too hard crash. I only had my glasses in here, so. This was slippery final, but luckily I don't have too much injuries.
How confident were you that Nikias would be able to do it once the plan had kind of worked?
Yeah, we were. When I was looking in the group, when we rode away, I was looking who was fast and who was not, and I was pretty confident that Nikias was at least one of the fastest, and he really had a good chance, but he had to go over that climb first. And we did well on the climb to cover the attacks, and then I just knew that Nikias had a good chance if everything came together. So we played it perfect as a team.
Well, he won very comfortably in the end, so an evening to celebrate this evening.
Yeah, for sure, we're going to celebrate this. I think this is the first Grand Tour victory this year for us, if I'm correct. It's a really nice one. We already had the red jersey with Nico. Unfortunately, he's already home now after a bad crash. So we had some bad luck already here, but this is great.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet reminding us to tell you that this episode of our Vuelta coverage is sponsored by Roca Sunglasses, who were founded in 2013 in a garage in Austin, Texas, with a mission to create the world's finest eyewear. And they've got one of the favourites for the Vuelta wearing their sunglasses, Miguel Angel Lopez. And also
Lionel Burney.
I was going to say Jesus Herrada,
yeah.
Richard.
Our listener pointed this out, didn't they, the other day? We had Dan Martin, who's a Roca sunglasses wearer, endorsing the sunglasses in this very slot. But on that day, in fact, Jesus Herrada had won the stage, and he also wears the Roca sunglasses.
He does indeed. And, Richard, we've been wearing them this summer. We've had some glasses designed for riding bikes and some leisure glasses as well.
Yeah, I got the same leisure glasses as you, the Barton ones, and I love them. They're great. I also got the GP series for riding my bike. And again, as you were saying, Lionel, they've got these the bendy arms, and they don't fog up, and they're very, very, very light. I mean, incredibly light. It's like having a feather on your nose, but less tickly. So far more pleasant altogether. I'm going to use the discount code that you're about to announce to get these sunglasses as presents for Christmas for my brothers. Hope they're not listening. Well, I don't mind if they are, actually, but that's what they're getting for Christmas, because they are fantastic glasses. I'm really, really pleased with mine.
You say we've got the same leisure glasses, the Barton model, but actually they look completely different.
Mine are more flamboyant.
They are more flamboyant. You've got the sort of the translucent frames and the mirrored lenses. I've got the classic matte black frames and black lenses.
I'm just desperate to prove to Daniel that I'm not conventional. I'm not a dad-like figure. I'm flamboyant, Lionel.
But
I'm really going out there with my sunglasses choice.
You are indeed. You are indeed. Well, Miguel Angel Lopez and Jesus Herrada, as I mentioned, are riding the Vuelta wearing Roca sunglasses. But there are other riders too. Dan Martin, as we've heard, Nicky Terpstra and the Total Direct Energy team. Rui Costa, Magnus Cort, the Bols Dolman team as well. And, well, if you would like to check out the Roca range, Roca describe their glasses as the lightest, most advanced eyewear in the peloton. And if you want to see what they have to offer, go to roca.com/Vuelta. That's roca.com/Vuelta. And Roca is spelled R-O-K-A. And if you order using that link, you'll get 20% off your off the price. And well, Richard, always on the lookout for a bargain.
If my brothers are listening, tell me which model you'd like.
Well, Richard, a little bit earlier today, while the stage was still going on, I went and caught up with Orla Chenoui, co-host of the cycling podcast Feminin, of course, and also she's anchoring Eurosport's coverage at the Vuelta a España. And well, it's been a very sunny week, but we can always do with another little ray of sunshine, can't we? She certainly makes me feel a bit more, you know, a bit less curmudgeonly, a bit less Eeyore-ish with her enthusiasm.
Most people do, to be fair.
Nearly everyone does, yeah. Yeah, but Orla perhaps, you know, that little bit more. Anyway, in what I was reluctantly calling the Irish section of the podcast, I caught up with Orla at the finish this afternoon. Good afternoon, Orla. We're in Igualada in Catalonia, not far from Barcelona, and you've got your Eurosport brolly up. It's raining.
I know, it is raining. Unfortunately, I'm a bit disappointed with myself that the brolly isn't leather. You do know I haven't seen a leather brolly either, no, but that was a little segue into Igualada being Europe's capital of leather. Such a thing exists. Who knew? I didn't even bring any leather.
I think the winner today gets a leather jersey. No, they don't. And they have
I
to wear
like
it tomorrow.
That. Yeah, I'd do that. I'll borrow it from him if he doesn't want it.
Some kind of leather tunic or jerkin or gilet.
Leather chaps.
I was going to introduce this, Orla, as the Irish segment, but I don't want to pigeonhole you.
Oh, I get pigeonholed all the time. You'll either introduce it as the Irish segment or the woman's segment, or there's plenty of boxes that you can shove me into. It's all right. Just open the lid every now and again. Give me some air.
Well, I was just going to talk about the fact that Sam Bennett lost the green jersey to Nairo Quintana yesterday, and I was reflecting on the long drive up here today, just how unsprinter friendly the Vuelta is, really, because today is described as a flat stage, but it's just nothing of the sort. There's a second category climb within sight of the finish. We're talking before the finish here. We know there's a big break up the road. Sam Bennett himself was saying it was unlikely that he'd get over the climb to contest the points. And really, it's loaded against him, isn't it, the points jersey competition?
It is, and he said that to us as well. He was a little bit sort of reflective already while he was in green at the prospect of losing it when that time came, because he said, you know, it's too hard really for sprinters here than it is for the more climby fast men. There are flatter stages to come, but you've got to get over the mountains first, and that's the problem. He did say he would hope to contest today, but providing that the breakaway didn't get away, and that breakaway just looks too strong. And as you say, we will be overtaken by events, and Sam Bennett's probably won, and he's got the green jersey back again, but I very much doubt it. But, I think the strength that he showed on the stage that he won and the stage that he lost, also crucially, means for me, if he can get over those climbs, he's still the strongest sprinter here.
Well, that he certainly is, but it's not just the problem of him getting over the climbs, is it? It's the terrain where the likes of Valverde, Roglic, Lopez, Quintana are going to be hoovering up points without really even targeting the green jersey. I think the overall contenders maybe would shift their focus onto it in the final week once they know the red jersey's gone. I mean, when you look at the recent winners, Valverde has won it 1, 2, 3, 4 times in the last 7 or 8 years. Chris Froome, of course, won it a couple of years ago. That list there doesn't have a lot of pure sprinters on there. Mark Cavendish, of course, notably in 2010. But if you remember, they had a real job, Cavendish and Farrar, just keeping the climbers at bay. And it's not really a competition for the sprinters. I was wondering, it'd probably be harder for Peter Sagan to win the green jersey here than it is for him at the Tour de France. He's won it at the Tour de France since records began, I think.
Yeah, it probably would be after the records began. Feels that way, doesn't it? It probably would be, actually. And it's not just the other guys who are going for the intermediate sprints, but it's on a stage like today, you've got the breakaway, and to bring that back takes all sprinters' teams working together. And if a few of the sprinters' teams decide, actually, that's not going to happen, Bora can do all they like, but they're not going to bring it back single-handedly. So they all have to work together for Sam's chances of green, really. And yeah, he didn't really rate his chances, to be honest, but I think if he gets another stage win here, another couple, I think if he can make it that far, he'll be the most successful sprinter this year anyway, and I think that's prize enough for him, quite frankly.
I would say Alejandro Valverde will end up being the favourite for the green jersey, and if he does win it, remember his teammate Quintana's got it at the moment, but if Valverde was to win it, that would nudge him ahead of Sean Kelly and Laurent Jalabert and make him the first 5-time winner and knock Ireland's Sean Kelly. Can you see what I'm doing here?
Oh.
The Ireland segment is... this has all been thought about, Orla. I can tell you're impressed.
That shoehorn is sticking out of your back pocket there, Lionel.
Well, Sean Kelly won the first of his 4 green jerseys here. I'm actually going to be a bit careful, because back in the 80s, it wasn't always green, the green jersey, the points competition. But he won the points competition in 1980, 85 and 86 and 88. And just to hop over the Irish Sea for a minute, to mention that this year is the 30th anniversary of Malcolm Elliott's points jersey win. And the reason I've talked about green not necessarily being the colour is because in 1989, I know for a fact, the jersey was blue. And, Elliott, who had ridden the Tour de France for ANC Halfords, as the thunder cracks over our head. Is that Broly got a metal point on it?
I think it does, but we're underneath a lot of tall metal structures, so I think we'll be all right. But you can hold it if you want.
No, you're all right. But Malcolm Elliott had joined the Spanish Tekker team in 89. Probably seen the Tekker trucks around with the logo on. They make kitchen equipment, hobs and cookers and stuff. Interesting bit of trivia there. But Malcolm Elliott was locked in a battle with a Dutch sprinter called Mathieu Hermans. And back in those days, the Vuelta was a bit more sprinter friendly. They had a lot more flat stages, partly I think because it was held in the spring and they couldn't really go into the higher mountains because the weather would mean that the big climbs would be possibly still snowbound or the risk of being taken out of the route. That was a heck of a lightning.
It certainly was.
Yeah, yeah. Should we wrap up the segment here?
You're looking scared. Well, I just wanted to say one thing about Valverde, because if he does win this, that would be, as you say, his 5th green jersey. And given this guy just kind of blows me away, really. 39 years of age. That was his 120th career win up the climb yesterday, Massa La Costa. Do you know what age Tadej Pogacar, the youngest rider in this race, was on the day that Valverde won his first Vuelta stage in 2003? Guess.
Well, I said yesterday that Miguel Angel Lopez was 9 when Valverde won that stage.
I was listening, I know, and I thought, I bet I can go one better.
So Pogacar was probably about 6.5.
4.
Four.
He was 4. Wow. Almost his 5th birthday, but he was still a little 4-year-old when Valverde first won in 2003. Isn't that bonkers?
It is. I mean, things have levelled up a bit since then. I mean, they can do the same races now. They couldn't then.
Well, that's because he's grown up, isn't it?
Just one little story that tickled me today, that De Koninck Quickstep have signed a young Belgian rider, 20-year-old Belgian rider called Mauri van Sevenant, son of Wim van Sevenant, who won the Lanterne Rouge at the Tour de France 3 years running from 2006 to 2008. But the thing that tickled me was that Mauri's grandfather wanted him to be named Morris when he was born, but Wim and his wife, I'm assuming, weren't keen on that. So Wim basically lobbied to call the boy Mauri after the 1991 Vuelta winner, Melchor Mauri. extraordinary. I mean, extraordinary. True. Sarah in black and white.
Wonderful.
But it made me wonder, Orla, we both had children in the last year or so. We had a girl, so I couldn't name her after any Vuelta winners. Or maybe I could. I'd have to look at the list. Mm. But, you missed a trick there. Aitor Gonzalez Chinui, surely.
Well, the thing is, I had to rule out some names because they were cyclist names. And I thought, I cannot come to a race and tell everybody that, you know, my son is Thibaut, for example, because I really like the name Thibaut, but I didn't want him to be Thibaut Chinui. I actually really like the name Lance as well, and I thought that had to be ruled out. And then I was lobbying quite hard for a while for the name Casper, and I was trying. I thought then I could. Gaspar is quite common in the Netherlands. I was going to go for Gaspar, but I was going to go Casper, and then in the end, I was really glad I didn't because Mark Cavendish's youngest son is Casper as well. So yeah, I had to. I had to navigate the whole field of names in cycling so I hope there's not a famous cyclist Austin anyone is there, and it's not because of Austin, Texas, before anyone goes there, but there will be in the future. Watch Austin Chinui, his little legs, they've got power in them already, I tell you.
Track sprinter by the looks of him.
You calling him? Are you calling?
No.
Are you?
That wasn't what I meant at all. That wasn't what I meant.
I tell you what, I'm FaceTiming home and I'm absolutely devastated because it looks like he's losing a roll of fat per week. And I love it when they're so chunky to begin with. I've had so much to grab a hold of and there's less of him to grab a hold of. I know what you meant. He is a unit. He is a unit. And for that reason, I'll go for track or sprint on the road. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we nearly called our daughter Orla. Well, we didn't actually, but the name was on the list and obviously had to be ruled out. I mean, that would have been unusual. I mean, couldn't you'd think she was named after you. But
this is exactly what my brother did, right? So his second child, they didn't name her for what felt like weeks. It probably wasn't. And in the end, her name is Katie now. She's my goddaughter. And he said, you know what? We wanted to call her Orla, but we didn't want you to think we were naming her after you. And I was like, that's the worst anti-compliment I've possibly ever received. Anyway, their third girl is called Orla, so we got there in the end.
Well, if you're listening to this wondering what's happened to the cycling podcast, we're banking on this being a fairly run-of-the-mill finish to the stage. But we'll know that. You'll know that by the time you get to this point in the podcast. But let's get it back to cycling. If you're out there listening and thinking, yeah, we named our son or daughter after somebody from the world of cycling, let us know on Twitter @cycling_podcast. Did you manage to sneak a cycling name onto the shortlist and try and get it under the nose of your non-cycling fan partner, perhaps?
And if you are full-bellied at the moment and expecting a little sprog on the way, don't rule out Orla or Lionel because they're beautiful names.
Now I know you're taking the mickey, but maybe Sam or Nairo will be on the popular list for boys this year.
Nairo Smith, I like it.
Thank you very much, Orla. Well, I won't see you again until the final week, so have a good middle week of the Vuelta.
And you enjoy your time at home. Happy times with the family.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast and supporting you. You can get 25% off all your Science in Sports nutrition products with the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. At the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. It doesn't work in conjunction with any other offers, but that will get you 25% off everything else at scienceandsport.com. So, Lionel, what else from today? We've got the audio diaries to listen to, haven't we?
We have, yes. James Knox and Nick Schultz continue to knock it out of the park, as they say.
Well, let's hear from them. First, Nick Schultz. And then James Knox, both of them with a long bus journey after the stage up to Andorra for tomorrow's stage. And then they've got a really long one tomorrow after the stage, tomorrow up to Po, which is, yeah, two big hefty old schleps there in the bus.
I wonder whether anyone's keeping a record of the distance of the transfers against the distance of the race, because they must be doing at least the same again in the bus compared to what they're doing.
Has that been the story of the first week generally?
I wouldn't say the story of the first week, because as Daniel pointed out in our kind of race preview, this Welters is kind of 3 weeks in three different regions, isn't it? I suppose, well, the first region down on the Costa Blanca and then just about, you could stretch that up to here into Catalonia, and then Andorra and the Pyrenees and across the Basque Country.
I mean, Andorra is a sort of a kind of stepping stone into France, but there's quite a big, I mean, the drive tonight to Andorra is 2.5-3 hours, and then 4 hours probably tomorrow evening into Pau. It's a long way.
Yeah, and ASO, I mean, remember ASO own this race as well as the Tour de France. I mean, Andorra is a regular on the course. You wonder what Andorra's got on ASO. Are they in possession of incriminating photographs?
Well, I mean, you're Andorra bias, Lionel. They might just fancy holding a stage here because it's a challenging place to hold a mountain stage. And tomorrow should be a cracking stage, to be fair. But we'll get on to that. Let's hear first from Nick Schultz first, and then James Knox.
Stage 8, all over. So one more day before the rest day to go. A solid start again today with everyone thinking that the breakaway would probably go to the line, which it did, so that made for another long battle. But once the break went, Astana rode their tempo and controlled the affairs, and it was more or less a straightforward day until a bit of rain on the final climb and descent, which just upped the nerves. But all in all, straightforward day. Currently sitting in the bus for another 3-hour transfer up to Andorra for tomorrow's stage. So these long transfers can be quite tiring and just annoying when you've spent all day on the bike. But basically during them, a lot of us just find things to do, whether that's reading or scrolling social media or catching up with current affairs. I think it's pretty personal. But when we first get on the bus post stage, we eat. So normally there's options of rice, pasta, and muesli, and then we take a bit of time to just chill and relax and get our things together, get our washing organised so the soigneurs can take that and wash it. And then I guess during a transfer like a 3-hour one, we will generally eat again. So whether that's a sandwich or some cereal or something like that, again, it's pretty personal. I personally live up the back of the bus where there's a big couch. I like to lay down, listen to my music, catch up with my girlfriend. As often, once we get to the hotel, things get pretty hectic again with dinner and massage and just general maintenance and recovery things. But for example, the transfer yesterday was so long and we arrived so late that we didn't have massage. We just got to the hotel, we ate, and then went to bed. Often during these long transfers, because everyone suffers a bit of boredom here and there, we all sort of move around the bus and catch up and talk about the day's events, or just have a general joke amongst ourselves, which is always good. We have a really good ambience in the team, so that's important, and it keeps us all going on these sort of long, tiring trips. And then once we get to the hotel, we've generally got some brilliant food prepared by our chef, Nicky Strobel. He's really good and always takes orders. Essentially, in the morning at brekkie, normally he'll ask us all what we're feeling for dinner and prepare that. So there was nothing better after a 3-hour trip and a late arrival last night than some fresh sushi, some slow cooked lamb, chicken, rice, pasta, and then some pretty gourmet desserts as well. So that's always really nice. But on that front, the staples are always rice and pasta, little alternatives there, and then we'll mix up the sort of the main protein or meat content. So it'll either be fish, chicken, or red meat. So we're pretty lucky in that regard, and that's something that I'm first experiencing this season with the team. We don't have a chef at all races, but when it's really important, we do, and it's a really nice privilege to have. Another couple of hours left of this trip. I'll be trying to recover as much as possible. I might put some recovery boots on, try and get a little bit of a lay down in, as tomorrow is a really big day. Not kilometres wise, but climbing, it's crazy, and it'll be a lot of hours in the saddle for what will be a very, very key day on the GC, I think. Cheers.
Stage 8 done. Currently en route to Andorra now, with a bit of a big day in the bus as well as on the bike today. I think we had a couple of hours this morning and 3 or 4 hours after the stage. I'm hoping this will be one of the longest days. All in all, a pretty straightforward day. I was struggling at the start with Loquat. I was just really stiff from the crash yesterday. You know, I would have liked to have been in that breakaway, but it was flat, hard start, and I didn't really have the gas to get anywhere. I was just sort of pinned in the wheels, so a little bit disappointed now seeing it was a big move and some of the other guys who were in there, guys around me on GC, but yeah, to be honest, can't complain when I just didn't have it. Nice to get to see Stevie up there. I think he was pretty close to the victory, or he went for it anyway. He made a ballsy move from what I hear, but it didn't pay off, so can't do much about that. Big day tomorrow, up and down all day. Hoping the legs are going to be good for that. Surely get found out anyway. There's going to be no hiding tomorrow. I've had a bit of free time in the bus this morning, so I was listening to I'm not really a podcast person, so I had to listen to the podcast and heard Nick name drop me for about a Velo Games question, and he's right. I might fire a question to my brother, because me and my brother have been going head to head in Velo Games. We just do the Grand Tours, but we've been doing it now for years, like 4 or 5 years almost, or however long it's been going. Been sad to see this ASO disruption at the tour. Not about that, but I'm not doing so well. I'm doing okay. I've got Valverde. Who else have I got? I've got Valverde, Roglic, Bennett, Miguel Angel Lopez, and Mezcek as my main guys. So, a bit of a mixed bag. You know, took a punt on getting all the big GC guys at the cost of a top sprinter, but, you know, decent tactics for the Vuelta, seeing as though it's mainly punchy guys and it's hard to pick breakaway riders. Been asked about roomies. Yeah, staying in with Phil, someone I really look up to. Well, even before I joined the team, he was, I think I started watching cycling when I was about 11, 2007, I can remember some of my early races, and since I've been watching cycling on the TV, he's been one of the big stars. So it is a little bit strange to be teammates with him now. I remember first joining the team, it was really strange, but he's a great guy to room with, lots of experience, some brilliant stories, always laughing, always in a good mood, no matter what. And yeah, bags of experience, so always there to answer any questions or, you know, talk things through, so it's been good so far. Sort of person you want to be sharing a room with. I've been pretty lucky, to be honest. I shared with Bob Jungels at the Giro. Got to see what it was like sharing a room with a guy with GC aspirations. Sort of showed the level of perseverance and commitment there. And then with Phil, a bit of a other side of the coin, but again, someone who's extremely professional, and he's all in here for chasing victories and building up fitness for the world. So yeah, and he's going to be leaving next year, so it's a pleasure to spend some time with him before he goes. And the other thing I noticed listening to the podcast, there was some remarks made about me and Nick knowing each other, but yeah, maybe unbeknownst to the guys at the cycling podcast, me and Nick have been racing against each other and training with each other since 2016 now. We're actually really, really good mates, so we hang out a lot. And yeah, one of those guys, always really, really happy to see do well, and always going for a catch pin or race. Or we've both spent quite a bit of time in Girona, so we're both kicking about there. So yeah, by pure coincidence, you've got us both on, but we by all means aren't strangers. So that little breakaway incident yesterday was more than just, yeah, been known to each other because of the cycling podcast diarist we were, yeah. When you see someone you're good friends with in a break or moment like that, it's always pretty commonplace to have a bit of a cheer each other up. Well, it's for me anyway. It's nice having friends in the bunch, yeah. And I consider Nick one of the best ones.
So James Knox there, Corrections Corner from James Knox. He and Nick Schultz are very good friends. We didn't know that when we asked them. Well, you asked Nick Schultz to keep an audio diary. I asked James Knox to keep an audio diary. And we didn't know that they were good friends.
No.
I don't know how we would know that necessarily.
The thing is, somebody asked how we chose the riders. And I suppose Nick Schultz left an impression on me because he was so eloquent talking about how he got his contract in the World Tour last year.
And
at the
quite an interesting sort of story.
Very interesting. He rode for a Spanish team. You know, when you think of the Australian riders, in common with the British riders, you know, there's a very well-worn pathway into the World Tour now, isn't there, with Mitchelton Scott for the Aussies and Ineos, or Sky as it was for the Brits. And anyone who goes a circuitous route, automatically there's a sort of a point of interest there. And the fact that Nick Schultz had ridden for Caja Rural, as had Hugh Carthy, in fact, you just get the sense that they must have something about them. Because not to say that it's easy to make the route through a kind of more conventional way, but if you have to go and uproot yourself and go and live in another country where English isn't the first language, and kind of learn about the sport from a completely different direction, that must be harder than just coming through a series of steps that lead you either to Team Ineos or lead you to Team Mitchelton Scott. And I just thought he could express himself very well. James Knox, likewise. I mean, the pair of them have been offering some really interesting insights, so may it continue.
Yeah, the Vuelta, if you recall, last year finished in Andorra before transferring down to Madrid. And I took the opportunity to spend a couple of days in Girona, do a few interviews, and one of the people I met in my couple of days in Girona was James Knox. I hadn't met him before, actually, and did an interview with him that featured in the podcast last year. But I also thought he was a very bright, articulate, interesting guy who rides for the world's top team or the world's most prolific team. And, you know, interviewed him at the Giro this year again before he pulled out, unfortunately. And I found him that he had interesting things to say about the race. He's very thoughtful, and so I thought he'd be good. So, yeah, we're pleased that they've done so well.
He's from Cumbria as well, and half my grandparents were from Cumbria, so I automatically
you've got a foot in every camp. The
Irish wing, they came across from Ireland to Cumbria, so you know that's
the Irish wing. And I've actually arrived in Spain with two of Stacey Snyder's beautiful cups because I took delivery of four of them the other day. Thank you, Stacey, for sending those over to London. Via a friend of yours, who I'm very grateful to as well. And I decided to bring two of them out here to present to Nick and to James at some point to thank them for their diaries. But I told Stacey today that I was going to do that, and she was very happy, not least because today's stage went very close to a town, a ceramics foundation, where she lived and worked for two summers when she was in her 20s, just a few years ago. In a village called Galifa. So she's very pleased that that they're going to get the cups, and that the Vuelta went close to a place that she knows well and is close to her heart today.
I mean, there's a huge ceramics industry in Spain, isn't there? So that's, that's interesting.
And a second batch of Stacey's Vuelta Cycling Podcast cups will go on sale next week sometime. We'll let you know when. The first batch sold out in, I think, a minute. Raising money for good causes, so we'll do a second batch soon and we'll let you know when they're available. But they've been an amazing success this year, so thank you for supporting them, everyone who's bought one. Is that it for tonight, Lionel?
It is. It's nearly dinner time.
when the bar of soap goes ricocheting around the bathtub tomorrow, who's going to end up with a bar of soap tomorrow night?
I think Miguel Angel Lopez will be back in red tomorrow night. But
funny, there are sort of two virtual leaders of the Vuelta at the moment, aren't there? There's Miguel Angel Lopez and Primoz Roglic.
Yes. this afternoon when I saw Orla, I did my impression of a ski jumper. This isn't going to work in audio, so let's move on. But anyway.
What does that look like, Lionel? Wow. I mean, I can convey it to the listeners, maybe.
In the third week. If Roglic is still in contention in the third
when
week.
When do you come back out?
Middle of the third week, I think.
Well,
The rest day is on the Tuesday. I think I arrive on the Wednesday.
All right, as late as that. So I've got quite a long time before you get back.
You're going to have to listen to a lot of podcasts. just your own brain.
Oh, no.
I mean, I don't envy you.
Right.
It's been hard.
Let's say a few thank yous to friends of the podcast. And a reminder that if you sign up as a friend of the podcast, you can listen to some exclusive episodes. We've got another writer diary coming up for Friends of the Podcast soon as well, haven't we?
We have. Are we going to spoiler that now, or are we going to?
Why not?
Last year we asked Conor Dunn if he would keep a diary for us at the Tour of Britain, and of course, then the Aqua Blue team folded pretty much a week or so before the Tour of Britain, and they didn't even ride, and that spawned the no-go tour where Conor Dunn and Larry Warbass, his Aqua Blue teammate, went off bikepacking, and they made a really entertaining audio diary which we put out, and there may be a visual version of that coming at some point soon. I mean, don't want to say too much about that, but we thought, we didn't manage to do that last year, so let's ask Conor again, and fingers crossed. He will be keeping a diary for us at the Tour of Britain. He's riding for Israel Cycling Academy, of course. And Larry Warbass is riding for AG2R. So a year after we first asked, hopefully we will, fingers crossed, we'll be able to document the Tour of Britain through the eyes of Conor Dunn and Larry Warbass.
Great. That's all coming. Looking forward to that. So sign up as a friend at thecyclingpodcast.com. And among those who have are... Cayman Murphy, is that Cayman? Cayman Murphy, sorry. Carol Elliott, Ian Campbell, Jeff Rosim, Paul Noble, Dirk Peter, Jan Vlasblom.
And thank you to Marcus Tyrrell, Callum Duncan, Alan Owen, Stuart Wesley, Michael Giddings, Mark Sheldon, and Andrew Logan.
And a few special thanks to special friends of the podcast. I can't remember how far down this list I got. Last night, so I'll just say David Gilbert, Dan Jones, James Pellett, John McKillop, Luke Edwards, Martin Wastey, Mike Hewison, Moyin Islam, Latham Matthew, Nicholas Brown, and Paul McAlevey. Thank you very much.
Before we go, Richard, I should just say that we will be doing our regular rest day press conference episode. So if you're wondering about how we make the podcast or want to ask a question about the Vuelta or anything to do with professional cycling and you'd like to ask us a question, please phone one in. Record a message and send it to us on WhatsApp. The number is +44 797 133 8205. So you record the message and then send it to us on WhatsApp.
Well, you can record a message and send it on WhatsApp, or you can record a WhatsApp voice memo and send it like that. Whichever you prefer. Either's fine.
Modern technology is amazing, isn't it? But we'll answer anything, more or less. Well, thank you, Richard. You're taking over the microphone. I'll be listening in. I mean, I'll be on the other end of a phone if you need me at any point.
I will need you, Lionel.
I'll be watching the Vuelta at home and critiquing your performance from afar.
Great. Well, safe journey home, Lionel, and see you back out here soon.
Thank you very much, Richard.